If you look at Josh Allen over the last, really, six times they've been in a playoff, the last six playoff losses, he has 14 touchdowns to one interception. He has a QBR of 88. He's only taken six sacks and 237 dropbacks. They lost three consecutive times by 3 points or fewer. Where should the scrutiny be? Defense.
Yeah.
Can we get a stop? Can Josh Allen play defense? Because if he can't, that's where the scrutiny should be. To me, Josh Allen has done enough to win a Super Bowl, to get them to a Super Bowl. The defense has been the one that's let him down.
So I am of the belief that the Allen Wars are about to begin. Go with me on this and give me your thoughts on it as well. I'm trying to remember way back when Tyrod Taylor was the Bills quarterback. And like I said, go with me on this because Allen and Tyrod are not all that comparable other than being big-time Bills quarterbacks or whatever. Bills quarterbacks that we care about. And the Tyrod Wars were mild. We, I think, in the area had the belief that he was pretty good, but you want a franchise quarterback. And that was, you know, the bell curve would have everybody in the, hey, he's all right, we like him. He's better than most that we've had, but you'd like to dream bigger. And it would get written about how, I think Mina Kimes wrote an article, how Tyrod was so polarizing because he was pretty good, but is he good enough? And I thought around here, yeah, we kind of all know where he should be. And with Allen, it's that, except it's all the way to the top end. We know he's great. There's no arguing that he's great. And yet, I'm going to hear 1,000 different shouty shows talk about whether or not he's good enough to win it. And if he bears responsibility in whether or not they haven't won it. And there's the entry-level question. Does Josh Allen have any, at all, in your mind, any blame for him for having not delivered the Bills a Super Bowl? I think the answer has to be some, but certainly not most of it, and certainly not a lot of it. He consistently plays excellent in games that they don't win, games that end their season. But we're so far down the line on Allen's career, he's 30 now, that I think these shows that talk about this kind of thing, in the age of 24-hour sports and Twitter and all this, when Peyton Manning was going through, Peyton Manning can't win the big one, I don't think that there was as bright a spotlight on the NFL. I don't think there was as bright a spotlight on social media. I don't think it was all that regular for me to see or you to do it. Bills fans yelling with Ravens fans, yelling at Chiefs fans online all day, every day. And Allen got that MVP, and it felt like for a minute the temperature was turned down. He got something that validated him. We knew he was one of the best quarterbacks in football. We've known this for years, that he's incredible. The arc of his career went from a raw prospect, polarizing whether or not people wanted him. First year, there were some signs. Second year, it looked pretty good. Things were going the right way. Third year, the moon. Like, that's it. That's the arc. There was very little wondering if this was going in the right direction. And since that time, we have felt he's one of the best. And whether it's being ranked above the other guys or winning the MVP, it's the validation has come for him in many, many, many ways. He wins the MVP. He's talked about as the best player. The NFL players rank him the best quarterback in football. So he's climbed the ladder. And now there really is only one thing left to do, and that's win the whole thing. That's the only thing he can do now to further validate or extend what people think of him, to win the Super Bowl. And every minute of this year, I almost want to say, I'm feeling this, Bills fans. Like, I want to start to get ready for that's normal for us now, is to hear, it used to be Dak Prescott, or I think the is Joe Flacco elite thing is kind of a joke conversation, but like these all-time sports arguments, LeBron or Jordan, who's greater? This is the NFL's LeBron versus Jordan right now. This is going to be their go-to. If the Bills are having a good season, which I anticipate they will, it'll be all about, on every show about football, whether or not the Bills have enough to get it done. And this season, I get the sense that we think they do, that they do have enough to get it done, and they need certain things to go their way. They certainly don't have the Rams roster. but they have a lot going for them, and the number one thing they have going for them is the quarterback. Like, we live in a town where the best quarterback in the NFL, I don't want to quite say undisputed best quarterback, but pretty close, a guy that is well accepted in many different ways to measure it, the best quarterback plays in Buffalo. And it's not been his fault. They've made big changes. They've given him more. It's time to win. And I'm hoping we can still have a lot of fun this season. I think we definitely will. I also think the new stadium will effectively change this conversation some. There's such a renewed view, a renewed vision of what this is. We'll get to see him again in an offense run by the head coach, not the offensive coordinator. How different will that be? I'm excited to find out. Do you think it'll be a little different? But the pressure will be exactly the same. And the one person I think that's in like the biggest pressure cooker of it all is the GM. He stayed. The head coach left. McDermott got blamed for a lot of things. And whether they were right or wrong kind of doesn't matter yet. As soon as we get to results, we'll know maybe what McDermott was actually good at, what he was bad at, whether it's challenges or fourth downs or anything like that. But I just think we're in such a time with Josh Allen where every conversation outside of town is going to be whether or not the great player is truly great. And I was trying on this point also. I was talking on the Bill Squad show with Joe Marino, Jerry Ostrowski, and Christian Round, talking about Allen and the constant conversation around the best players in the sport and why every conversation turns to legacy. Every single conversation about sports is legacy. If you try to talk Mahomes versus Allen right now, what does a Mahomes fan say? Well, he doesn't have Super Bowls. He says that about Allen. He or she says, well, Mahomes has three. And that's legacy, baby, right? The Tom Brady-ing of the world, the LeBron versus Jordan-ing of the world. Everything is about rings. Everything is about legacy. And my theory on that is because we watch all these games, we see great players, and we like to believe in some sort of magic, some sort of power where they're all the best of the best, but some guys just have that thing in the moment where they're superhuman. That's Joe Montana, that's Tom Brady, that's Kobe, that's Jordan. And in the endless LeBron debates, they'll bring up his shooting percentage on the final shot of the game. What's that about? That's about whether or not he is the magic in the moment. And LeBron, of course, has won plenty of titles. And for Allen, he's this incredible statistical monster. Everybody knows that. His defense has let him down. But the last 3 years, they've had the ball. Where's the magic in the moment? Mahomes always gets the credit for the magic in the moment. And I think with the Super Bowl, that there's only one team that wins it. That's the team that gets given the magic status, given the they had something special, that team. And if you lose the Super Bowl by 2 points, well, you know, you were a good team, but sorry, you just didn't have the thing you needed. Whatever the thing might need, that you need might be. You might think it's like a defensive tackle. You might think it's the will to win. I just think we get so romantic about the guys that ultimately win. Tom Brady can't stop telling you all the things that made him different. And for Allen to be that made man, to get to the mountaintop of he has that it, we all think he's got it. We all see it. We all watch him put this team on his back. We all watch him pull out plays. I watched a highlight montage of Allen throws from last year and thought, man, there are 100 throws I forgot about. He's a treat to watch. It is an absolute privilege to watch him play. And yet, unless he does that one thing that is not fully up to him, but that one thing of winning the Super Bowl, I don't want to say like the outside or the haters, I just think it's natural. It's natural. If Lamar has the career he's had and goes to the Hall of Fame and never wins a Super Bowl, how would you feel about Lamar? Would you feel like he was good enough to win the Super Bowl and just had a couple of bad games here or there? Would you feel like that drop by Mark Andrews was his fault on the two-point conversion? Maybe the Ravens win that game, and if they do, who knows, right? We do that with the Bills all the time. So I think the Allen Wars are just getting started. I want everyone to get ready. There are complimentary non-haters that want to see him get there. I can't think of another storyline in the NFL that is as compelling as Allen getting it. Jackson is in there in the same boat with him. It's Lamar, Josh Allen, and Connor McDavid. These are the guys that are at the top of their sport but haven't won the thing. They haven't raised the trophy. And I think Allen and Lamar, I think there's been a little separation in the last year, year and a half. Allen's pulled ahead. He's got better results. He's got more playoff success. Granted, not enough, but more playoff success. And I think if Allen were to win a Super Bowl, it'd be the best story in the NFL. If Lamar won it, it might be 1B. But if Lamar were to win it, I know if the Ravens made a Super Bowl, everyone around here is going to root against them hard. Because the notion of somebody else getting one instead of Josh hurts quite a bit. 803-0550, the Allen Wars. Prepare yourself all year long. All year long, all postseason, and until they win one. I think we are deep in them. 803-0550 if you want to share a thought. And 1-888-550-2550 is not a number. It's Friday. I did it on purpose to say it doesn't count. See? I was seeing if these guys were paying attention. Anyway, 803-0550. Game week next week. We're less than a week away from the start of the season. The Patriots and the Seahawks open things up Wednesday. Excited about it. Jeremy and Joe here on WGR.
It's Sal Capaccio.
I make a special capaccio for you, right?
Oh, yes. Now that sounds really good.
Oh, you like?
Hey, get away! Get away from my wife with that!
What's the matter, carpaccio no good?
What? What do you do now?
They don't like a carpaccio.
They like carpaccio.
Oh. On WGR.
I make a carpaccio for you.
Sports Radio 550.
That announcement about the Clippers owner and what he's not allowed to do reminds me of something I wanted to bring up with Sal, thinking you guys might both find it interesting. Maybe you already knew this, but so Josh Jacobs being on that commissioner's exempt list for the Packers, he can't go to games. Is that something that they would really like crack down on him for if he went? Like, you know, say he has a friend. Probably has a lot of them. Has a ticket.
Sidled up to a suite or something, whatever, sitting in the end zone.
If he gets caught at a Packers game, does that just make it doubly bad for him?
Yeah, I wonder what the punishment is.
Bad
if
behavior?
He violates his parole, so to speak.
Like Rashi Rice, when he got... That was a parole violation, wasn't it? Can't be on that level.
Yeah.
I think, but...
No, probably not. That was like police parole. Like, you know,
can't go to games?
Jacobs is on league, you know, punishment, so, yeah.
We had a good long discussion about his situation on ADP chasing last night, just like, you know, whether he could come back. And the right point was made, because I was talking to you yesterday about when does he come back? He doesn't have a court appearance until mid-November.
So why would they pull him back from that list before that if they saw fit to put him on it in the first place?
But one of my colleagues pointed out, for two misdemeanors, nobody's ever gotten like a year.
Right.
So what does happen there? Sal Capaccio with us now on the West Her Hotline. Sal, any thoughts on this with Jacobs? Like, there's probably a video, right? And he gets put on this list, and we'll just have to see for how long.
Yeah, I mean, those circumstances, I don't know. I mean, I guess so. It seems like it kind of came up pretty quick, right? This all happened pretty quickly with him, I think, right? Whereas there's been situations in the past where guys have gotten in trouble, they've had allegations, or they've been arrested, and you know, it's kind of like the adjudication from the NFL doesn't so quickly. So this one, I think, Mike, you can correct me if I'm wrong, this happened pretty quickly, I think, here.
I didn't even know until Mike told me that he had been put on the list. I knew that there was a situation.
Well, it happened in May.
But the video, like the acknowledgement of that and the league acting, I feel like all just happened like bam.
What happened right before that was Brown County, is it, in Green Bay, they reduced the charges from the original charges back when the complaint
incident
was filed.
Happened, yeah.
So they reduced it from felony charges to two misdemeanors, but the rumor was that there was a video of it. His garage surveillance video, Jacob's own camera. And so then the thinking was, well, if they have that, then they're going to get him. And that's what they did. And whether that gets out, I mean, if that gets out, it's probably bad, right? It probably looks bad for them to have put him on this list to begin with.
I think
if that gets out, he might just never play again.
You piece everything together here that legally the charges were reduced, but the knowledge of the video became known, and then the league acted like the league acted, the video must be pretty brutal, I'm going to guess.
Well, it's a awkward segue, I know, but thinking about like the importance of the running back in Green Bay, the importance of the running back in Buffalo, Sal. So James Cook, I was thinking about like who is the next most valuable player on the Bills after Allen. Would it be Cook for you? How replaceable is he? If they were to lose him to an injury, say, and we probably asked this question once last offseason too, you know, just to have the conversation one time, how would they suffer?
I think you'd lose, you know, some explosion for sure.
That's
in
the first
game.
Word that came to my mind was explosiveness. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, like you have to, you probably grind a little bit more on some of the, you know, drives that wound up being touchdowns and long runs. I mean, James had a bunch of those last year and in the last couple of years, really. I think that would be a number one way. You're always guarding against an explosive run from James Cook. He's just so good at finding certain holes and seams. And I always say seeing guys out of his ear hole. It's crazy. Like, his vision's incredible. Reminds me a lot of LeSean McCoy, the way his vision is. So I think that's number one. And yeah, I think teams knowing that this guy can take it to the house at any minute really kind of helps you dictate a little bit more on offense on what you want to do. Now, production-wise, if you said what's the, let's say, wins above replacement, yards above replacement, whatever it is, from James Cook, is it going to be massive? Probably not, because of the nature of the position. And if you're good at running the ball, you're good at running the ball. And somebody else will be good at running the ball. And Ty Johnson and Ray Davis could do it. But you're not going to get that explosiveness. You're not going to get those long runs and touchdowns. And you're probably going to get a different defensive look to make it harder on the entire offense, to be honest with you.
Long carries in games last year. Week two, 44 yards. Week three, that was against the Jets. Miami the following week, 26 yards. 64 yards against Carolina. Those are just the longs in the game. Like that Carolina game, he might have had another big longish one, just not more than 64.
That game, he could have gone for like a record.
They shut him down. Yep. Right. 45 yards against Houston, 31 against Pittsburgh, 44 against Cleveland. That's it.
These are longest runs of
longest
games.
Longest runs of games for him. Yeah,
that's pretty amazing, though. In the NFL, to have runs like that in a bunch of games.
I gotta say, like from where I was last year, you know, when they got the contract done, you know, coming off what was a very good year the year before, it was a lot of touchdowns. Is what it was, 16 touchdowns 2 years ago. The rushing yards were, you know, good, but he didn't lead the league. I didn't know he had that that he was a house call waiting to happen, really. And yeah. I think the last two seasons, that part of his game has really emerged. So I think that's the thing you'd miss. Davis is going to move the sticks for you probably if he were the guy that you would tap if something happened to Cook. But I don't know that he's like beating cornerbacks to the edge and going 60 yards.
I agree. I think he looks like he might have been third in the league in 25-plus rushing yards. I'm not really sure exactly.
Rushes
don't
of 25
have exact
yards
number.
Or more. Yeah,
right. Read that. Thank you. Rushes of 25 yards or more. But, yeah, that's right. He is a guy that I think has really kind of exceeded what was expected of him when he came in the league, no doubt about it. He was kind of looked at as a pass-catching back, a third-down back. That they can use as, you know, a quasi-wide receiver. The Jerick McKinnon thing falls through. They go out and draft him. If you get McKinnon, you probably never even draft James Cook, to be honest with you.
McKissick.
Oh, J.D. McKissick. I said McKinnon. Yeah. Sorry, J.D. McKissick. Thank you for the correction. Mm-hmm. J.D. McKissick, you probably don't even draft him, but they do. So, yeah, I think he's really important. Is he the second most important player in the Bills? Certainly can make that argument. I would not push back against it. I think Deion Dawkins is still really important. I know he did not have the same year he had last year. I don't know what the Bills would do if they don't have Deion Dawkins this year.
Right.
I mean, you could try to have Spencer Brown play left tackle. That's really not his spot, though. He's never done that. Mm-hmm. And your backup right now is Tylan Grable. So, yeah, I think Deion Dawkins is still a really important player on a Buffalo Bills team that has Josh Allen at quarterback.
I would say the same thing. I guess we'll see about DJ Moore, how important he proves to be. But I would put Dawkins second behind Allen. Would you?
It's close. I like the case that we just built for Cook, the explosiveness. I like sort of sitting with that and not just blowing it off because of how, you know, running backs don't matter and all that. Like it's interesting to me to consider that that could be the right answer. The running back.
Who's the most important player on defense? That's a good. I'm going to make a podcast out of this. You guys now, me and I'm going to make this a topic with Bove. This is a good topic to ask, and I'm going to go to the other side because when you asked me, I said, let me try and think about both sides of the ball.
I was thinking about defense, and you know what the first name I thought of was, and you're probably both going to laugh at me. I thought of Cole Bishop.
Oh, wow.
I don't know who
I thought of Christian Benford.
Okay, yep.
I don't know who I'd pick. I don't think anybody really stands out. Oliver? No. Like, I don't know who I'd pick on defense.
Yeah.
I just think, let's say if you took one player off the field, how much would it impact what you do? I think if you take Christian Benford off the field, give him what you have, Max Harrison and Davison Igbinosin are your two next corners, I think
that's a better answer than Cole Bishop.
The better case is Christian Benford right now.
Yep.
How about that we made it almost to opening day, having talked about some of the ex-Bills, specifically on defense, that left in free agency that are still not on a roster. We made it almost all the way through.
Yep.
Well, we did make it all the way through the preseason. Matt Milano, Trey White, you know, did Bosa end
Joey up? Bosa's not anywhere.
I mean, Leonard Floyd is also, I think, somebody, although it's been a little bit.
Right.
But you have these veteran Bills defensive players that were just not of that much interest, apparently.
Trey White is on that list, I think, too. You said him already. I'm sorry.
Yeah, like just.
Yep.
You didn't.
One of them came back, Shaq Thompson. He was until.
That's right.
Right?
Right.
I mean, it is a really interesting point. There has been a lot of discussion about this in different circles. Maybe we haven't talked about it a lot, but people have commented. And I think that the general consensus is, hey, that just shows you how old they were and how much they needed to change. And that's not wrong necessarily. I also think it shows you just how much Sean McDermott trusted his guys to know the system and, you know, maybe to a fault, right? Loyal to a fault and bringing too many guys back like that. And they still, you know, went out and, you know, made the playoffs and made it to the second round last year. And it shows that, you know, he did a good job, I think, with the players that he had right there. The average NFL career, I was just talking about this with somebody the other night. I think it was Aaron Quinn, actually, who said this to me. The average NFL career is, you know, 3.5 to 4 years, which is right. And a lot of these guys exceeded that and played it at a pretty high level for longer than that in Buffalo. You got to give them credit for it. And I agree with that. But man, like when you talk about and you think about what it looks like now compared to then, the first thing that jumped off the page to me watching the Carolina Panthers preseason game against the Buffalo Bills was the athleticism and speed of the Bills defense and how different it is. They're just so much faster now. They're so much more athletic now. They move around. They fly to the ball. And, you know, there was a way they did that under Sean McDermott, but it was mostly about just understanding where to be, being coachable, in the right spot, beating the block, all of that, all those things that, you know, are fundamentally sound in football. Whereas this defense is more of, I'm just going and I'm getting there because I have the tools to do that.
Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline with us here on WGR. What was the story of the day at practice? I did not see, you can correct me, and we should go through it anyway, but who was back or who wasn't participating was pretty much the same as yesterday, was it not?
Exactly the same as yesterday, okay. Yes. Yesterday and today, I get the names here, just so I'll read them off to make sure. Khalil Shakir, Ty Johnson, Javon Solomon, Jalen Kilgore, Jude Bowery, and Jordan Hancock. Now, unless they were in a different spot that I didn't see them, the ones I did not see today were Khalil Shakir and Jude Bowery. Everybody else I saw in some capacity, meaning like working off to the side with athletic trainers, but those guys could have done it at a different time, right? I mean, just so you know, because yesterday I did see those guys. I didn't see them today.
Yeah, Shakir was with the group working off to the side yesterday, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So, okay. You know, and we'll see where this goes with them. Now, this is the last practice of the week, at least for the media. I'm sure they'll have walkthroughs. So we're not going to really know anything until next week rolls around. And I think next week starts, you know, next week does start, like, you know, getting injury reports, things like that. But if any of these guys are missing next Wednesday when we go out to practice, that's the concern. That is a week from today. So we'll see what happens between now and then. But the same list as yesterday, didn't practice today. And the guys who were, so that means the guys who were there yesterday who came back were all back today. And that's always a good thing and notable because you want to make sure you get through a practice when you come back from an injury.
Any gut feel about Shakir here, Sal? 2.5 weeks, still off to the side. I guess he's another player where it might be fair to ask his importance. Like, if you were to get to Monday, they were to get to Monday, and he's not available to them still, then that's what we're talking about, I think.
My gut feeling is that he'll be suiting up, not from anything I know or heard, but just seeing him already out there working with, you know, trainers and how this generally goes. And the fact that it just kind of feels like the Bills have really collectively just done what they've had to do to keep guys ready to go and fresh and not rush them back. You know what I mean? And his time will come. Now, that could be totally wrong. Maybe we get out there Wednesday and Khalil Shakir is still not out there. I saw Khalil this weekend at his pet adoption event, which, by the way, was unbelievable and awesome. There's dogs and pups everywhere, right? It was great. and I went to that, I saw Khalil, and, you know, we're not going to talk about that, and I'm not going to ask him, you know, how are you doing, whatever, in that particular setting. But, you know, he was walking around. He was hanging out with fans and people, and, you know, and that was good to see, obviously, from him. So I'm going to just say that I think that it's trending well for him, and we'll see just from everything that I've seen, but we won't know until next week.
He's another player like Cook, I mean, like Dawkins, that they haven't had to go without very often. You know, right. Guys that have been on the field pretty much every game for them, if not every game. Shakir, 16 last year.
He's been banged up a little bit, though, the last couple of years and has played injured.
Okay.
You know, and like, remember the game in Baltimore a couple of years ago? He sprained his ankle early in the game.
Mm-hmm. He missed games after that, or at least one.
He did. And you're not wrong, Mike, but he's a gamer. He's gonna play. And that's why, like, I think now, like, okay, we know sometimes what do the coaches say? And this is true. You got to protect guys from themselves. I'm sure Khalil Shakir wants to be on the field and playing. The guy had some sort of surgery or whatever this offseason. He showed up right away to OTAs and minicamp, and he's out there. I'm like, oh, okay, he's out there, and he's doing his thing. Like, he's this kind of guy. He's going to play. He's going to play through things. So he has been banged up. He has played through things over the last couple of years. He's not the biggest guy in the world. You know, we know he bounces off people like a pinball sometimes, right? Gets twisted up, banged around. They throw him the ball in between all the bigger guys on the field when they throw those screen passes to him. So he's just the kind of guy, I think, that you got to make sure you keep as fresh and healthy as you can, because he's going to do whatever he can to play.
You know, as we're talking here about, you know, them maybe slow rolling some of these guys, Shakir in particular, that's who we're talking about. I'm reminded, was it yesterday that Bean said that DJ Moore did indeed get banged up in that same Carolina game that Shakir got hurt in, but didn't want to miss any time, so he just grinded through it. Talk about protecting guys from themselves. Like, that's sort of surprising to hear, I think. I mean, on one hand, I love it from Moore. Like, he wants to be with his new teammates and be an example and a leader and whatever, but he's also maybe the most important piece of the passing game, you know, receiver-wise. And I think it's a little odd that they didn't, protect him from himself, like you said.
Agreed. And I'm sure there's a different level of injury. You know, he got banged up versus maybe what Khalil's dealing with or something. But obviously, could be more severe with Khalil. He's been out for a little while. So you're right about that. And given the way all this is, same thing with Michael Hoyt. He said the same thing about him. Like, got to protect him from himself, right? You want to make sure that, you know, that guy, he's going to go out there and play. What did he say? If it was a playoff game in May, I would have played. Now, I mean, maybe that's ambitious, but that's what he said. And the proof is here, though, for DJ Moore, which is knock on some wood, because this guy does not miss games.
Yep.
He has played every single game for 5 straight seasons. And I'm quite sure that he's been banged up at times. And when he was signed, I think it was Chris Emma, who we talked with, our Odyssey station in Chicago. And Chris said to me, he goes, Sal, this guy, like, gets hurt. He doesn't go to the medical tent. Like, he wants to play. He doesn't even have that come into his mind. And you remember there was something that happened last year at the end of the year where he was criticized, right, Mike? You know this. Like, for something at the end of the year in a play, he maybe came off the field or something.
Yeah, he walked off the field. It was 2 years ago.
Yeah, it was the year before.
2 years.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, yeah.
Like, during the play was going on, and he just sort of gave up on it.
It's pretty hilarious. Actually.
Right. And I think that was kind of like something people had shown or highlighted or whatever. But for whatever happened there, which I don't know, like, I will just say, like, everything we know about this guy is that he just wants to play all the time. And you know, so when that happened, and that was kind of like maybe surprising to people, or just I just kind of thought, well, OK, maybe there's something there. I don't know. But all I know is this guy plays all the time.
Maybe this is a reach. I feel like some players in sports just don't know how to stop, how to sit, you know, how to take a break. people Agreed. Around them will tell them to do it. And my wife is the type where, like, she'll be really sick, but she can't not work. Like, she just almost, she has to be in really bad shape or else she is going to get to work. And I marvel at that because I love to sit around and not work.
Right.
I would love to sprain my ankle.
I love to be sick.
I would love to sprain my ankle. Oh, okay. Let's go to the tub. You know, I would be that guy. One of many reasons why I never would have made it in sports as an athlete, because I just didn't have that kind of drive. But, yeah, I think some players just can't not get up. We saw the DJ Moore injury in that game. It was obvious.
Yeah.
Like, his foot got twisted on the sideline there, and he got up a little bit late and a little bit gimpy. And then, you know, he missed at least one practice after that. But then he was, you know, then he went to Cleveland
and he was
out there
really quick. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I would say I never wanted to ever come off the field anything and would play through anything. And I remember I remember this happening in JV football one time, and we had a really hard practice, and it was like the next day I'm like, man, I'm not feeling it, right? And I remember like going to the nurse's office and like something was bothering me, like a tailbone or something. I'm like, yeah. So I get a note to get out of practice, like 10th grade. And I remember going to practice, and here comes like five or six other players on the team, like not practicing. And I'm like, oh my God, this is not good. Coach, I'm all right. I'm practicing. I did not want to be in that group, because that is what happens. That's the pressure of, I don't want to be lumped in with this. I don't want to be the, when things get tough, I want to sit. And that's just the way some people are wired. Mm-hmm. And I think that is way more common in pro sports, but you also have the other degree, Mike. You're right what you said. Some people never, ever, ever want to do that. That's just the way they're wired. It's their DNA, whether it's working or athletics. Some people are the other way. And I have heard stories about players like, yeah, like when things get a little tough, this guy's like, yeah, I'd rather kind of sit out right now. You know, that just happens, that you get all kinds. You get all kinds of people.
I'm like this about yard work. I'll just keep going. I know without question, my back is going to be killing me for the next 2 days. But like somebody, this topsoil's got to get thrown down. I'm going to do it. I don't have it in I'm not athletic enough for it to ever have mattered, but I will grind away knowing that I'm harming myself.
The closest I've ever been to that is in this job, where like if I'm sick, then they might find somebody better. And
right?
Like what if somebody fills in and they're better? Like, then I'm in trouble. So
that's,
I wouldn't want to
be
sick.
That's a big fear from people. That is why people do what they do in athletics and, you know, get out on the field and play. And for the superstars, for the guys at the top, the guys, even if DJ Moore, not a superstar, but a guy like DJ Moore who has been in this league and he's put a lot of time in, he just got traded like he did. He's going to be the number one receiver on the Bills. He could be the guy that says, I'm going to back off today. But we know about him that is not the case. So he is very important, by the way. To circle back to where you started, you know, he's a very important player on this team, because here's why. If you don't have DJ Moore, everybody else, we've talked about this, just fills in differently and it doesn't work as right. You need him at the top of your depth chart to allow Khalil Shakir to be who he has to be instead of being your number one, and allow Josh Palmer to be the number three and Keon Coleman not to have the pressure to be the number two, for example. So that's why DJ Moore is so important.
Like an ace pitcher, everybody has to move up, and
that's right.
The matchups are not pretty.
Right.
All right, Sal, any questions for us?
Did you guys see you heard the Kawhi news, right? You say that.
Yes,
is that
the Clipper news.
You've seen this. I have to tell you, so real quick, I was just about to go on. I had a spot scheduled on Sirius XM Radio, and that was at 5:30 to talk about the Bills. Mad Dog Sports. I was going to go on Mad Dog Sports in 6 minutes, and they just texted me and said, we have to cancel your spot today because of the breaking news surrounding Kawhi. And I'm like, wow. First time I've been canceled for breaking news in basketball. That doesn't happen on WGR very often. No.
Tell them you'll talk about
that is
about
happening
Kawhi
here on Sirius XM, yes.
Tell them you'll talk about the Clippers if they want.
Well, there you go.
I'm already
the
booked.
Former Braves.
Right, that's right.
That's it.
Yep.
There's the obvious tie in there.
All right.
Very good. Thank you, Sal. We'll talk again
soon.
All
right, you got it.
That's our Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. His appearances are brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
I was going to ask Sal if he has all his, like, fantasy, survivor pool picks, the circa, if he's got everything all sort of set for week one. There's still time.
You got time, yeah. That can be, you know, later in the week or even early next week.
I could see Sal playing in that circa, that $100,000 entry thing.
Oh, yeah.
I could see him doing that.
Yeah.
Get a couple guys together, maybe three.
I can't see anyone I've ever known in my entire life doing that, unless you consider me knowing, like, pro hockey players or football players that we've talked to, which I wouldn't consider me knowing them.
Sam?
I don't.
He's got to be number one.
I don't see Sam in
Andrew?
A 100,000. Or these people are—they work in our jobs like ours. They don't have $100,000.
That's the problem.
To throw at a survivor pool. That's the point.
I don't know. I could see either, both of those guys coming up with the money. I could see Andrew Filippone coming up with
maybe
the money.
Maybe if Sal sells some of his son's card collection, then maybe he can come piece the money.
I think his son is doing a pretty good job selling it on his own.
Well, okay then. But I'm saying.
From my interactions with him in Chicago.
Can appropriate some of those profits, and maybe then he can get there.
Maybe that's the guy you know that has the best chance of being in it. Sal's son. Maybe. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, 803-0550. Who's the second most valuable Bill? If you want to take a whack at that. We'll be right back after the update. This is WGR.
He said, what's the comfort level working with Steve? You can be brutally honest. You keep it
100.
All the way clear.
100.
I'll be slow a little bit.
No, we're locked in. We're ready to rock.
Are you as comfortable when CJZ is with you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I told you. Just saying. Chocolate Thunder.
CJ Gardner-Johnson talking about Cole. Actually, and Cole Bishop joined in. Talking about how comfortable they are with each other. Man, it feels like forever ago, Derek, that CJ Gardner-Johnson, the hype train around him, like right at the start of camp, was like reaching unhealthy levels. Like, it felt like we were all going to start watching his streams, like, just because we're like, oh, I love him. Like, he's great. Like, I just want to hear what he has to say. Then he picks up an injury. He's dealing with another one right now. That's why he was off the field for a little bit. Now he's back to practice. I can't wait to see him and Cole Bishop together, what that looks like. Bishop started to play better as a safety when he sort of had that coach on the field, the guy that can just get everyone in the proper positions and look at Bishop and go, go be athletic, go be young, go make plays. When Jordan Poyer, I joke about it. It was like they had lunch together and the light flicked on for Bishop. It's not necessarily that. It is more the quarterback on the field. To start training camp, it's what sounded like CJ Gardner-Johnson was doing. He was putting everyone in the right positions. He looked like the best player at camp. Here we go. That, I think, is maybe what would allow Cole Bishop to flourish and maybe get the Bills into a position where they haven't been in 4 years with Hyde and Poyer. You know, really 4, maybe 5 years, like the primes of their careers. And that's when those defenses with McDermott were so dangerous. And it really does take bad injuries to Von Miller and Trey White to ultimately have them lose in heartbreaking fashions. Because those defenses with those two were fantastic. I'm not saying it's going to necessarily be like that, but that's what I mean about star power. If Bishop can take that next step forward, be a Pro Bowl-type safety, maybe even an All-Pro-type safety, that would, I think, be the thing for the Bills to push them over the top, to have that kind of difference maker, not just on the offense, but on the defense as well. They're right there. It is a couple plays in different spots that are keeping them away from getting to the Super Bowl. Last year, it's a ultimately either drop ball or bad call by Brandon Cooks that keeps them out of the AFC Championship, and I think beating New England. The year prior, it's a bad call on Allen not getting the first down on the tush push, or a Dalton Kincaid drop away from them maybe going to the Super Bowl. They are right there every single time, and that's just on the offense. If the defense maybe forces another three and out, not a scoring drive, not a touchdown drive, but a field goal drive. They are right there. Season cannot get here soon enough. Our first game of the NFL docket is Wednesday, which originally, Derek, I got to tell you, thought it was stupid. And now that we are like right there, I think it's the best decision the United States has ever made. It's up there. It's up there as one of the best decisions ever made, is to have the NFL season actually start on a Wednesday. So they're going to have games Wednesday, Thursday. Then we're going to get to college with Friday, Saturday, NFL Sunday, NFL Monday. Because this week, leading into the NFL season, we have got college football games
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
The five-day marathon of college football. Then, ready? Football takes a break on Tuesday.
Of course, it's not in action yet.
Yep, we're not into Tuesday night action yet. And then the NFL begins on Wednesday.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Holy.
We all just
Connor Hellebuck trade. Tuesday, let's go. Book it.
That's dirty. That's naughty. No.
That's naughty.
Tuesday really has to just be a reaction to the 5 days that were. It's the Labor Day craziness of just here's all of the games. You know, and we don't have the marquee.
I'm going with the diabolical idea.
That's fine. I'm cool with that. Don't get me wrong. But we don't have any, I think, crazy matchups this weekend in college football. You know, there's a few really good ones. But for the most part, it is, of course, your week one. The craziness really gets started next week. That's when we're going to have Michigan and Oklahoma, Texas and Ohio State is week two. Where week one, a little more subdued, not as crazy. You know, Fresno State, USC might be a fun game, although USC is a 22.5-point favorite. Tonight, Michigan State, Toledo, which I'm going to get to. It's at Michigan State. Toledo is only a 10-point dog in that game.
Okay.
That one could be really, really interesting. But tomorrow, you know, you've got a few different ones here or there. Really the big one, though, is, of course, Clemson-LSU. It's later on in the night. It's at 7:30. You also do have Boise State at Oregon. Oregon did not get their season off to the greatest of starts last year or 2 years ago. I think it was 2 years ago.
A couple years ago.
They didn't get their season off to the greatest of starts. Penn State's a real big question. It's, you know, we talked with Brad Ryder yesterday at this time. It's mainly an Iowa State roster, of course, with some Penn State recruits. But it's not the James Franklin Penn State of the last couple of years where, yeah, they're going to lose in the big games, but they're not going to lose to Marshall. It's a real unknown with what's going on there. Auburn Baylor at Jordan or at Atlanta. It's at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. That should be a lot of fun. Auburn with a new head coach, Byron Brown, not the former mayor.
That's Byron Brown.
Exactly. At quarterback for Auburn, he's done incredible things at South Florida. They beat Florida last year in Gainesville, so that's going to be their quarterback and their starting game against Baylor at 3:30 tomorrow. But the best games are on Sunday and Monday. I've already mentioned it. Washington State, Washington at 4 o'clock on Sunday. Wisconsin, Notre Dame in Green Bay. They're playing at Lambeau for that one. That's going to be at 7:30, and then Louisville Ole Miss in Nashville. It's also at 7:30 on Sunday. And then Monday, we get SMU at Florida State, a Florida State team that I think most of us are really rooting that just crashes and burns. I'm really enjoying watching whatever that is. But
whatever that is.
With all of that, I kind of want to have some fun and go through a little bit here as we get ready for the college football season and what is to come. We know nothing about these teams.
Let's make some picks, brother.
Let's make some picks. Let's make a parlay. Let's have some fun here. Right away, I kind of want to have – I want to be able to go through the weekend. I don't want to just be on Thursday. I don't want to just be on Saturday or Sunday. I want to have some fun. So – right away, my first pick is I think Michigan State's going to cover -10.5 against Toledo. That number to me, with both of these teams, I think pretty heavily made up of transfers. Michigan State bringing in Pat Fitzgerald, formerly of Northwestern, who, you know, controversies aside with Northwestern from a couple of years ago, they were always a pretty solid unit under Pat Fitzgerald. They were never going to compete for the Big Ten title, but they're always going to be a pretty solid team. I could see this one where it looks juicy. You think there's maybe going to be an upset there. Toledo could, you know, surprise everyone, right? Another MAC team upsets a Big Ten program. I don't think it's going to happen. I think Michigan State will cover this one. It's a 10.5-point spread, by the way. I'm doing all of this on FanDuel. So I've got Michigan State for my first leg covering against Toledo at 10.5. Do you want me to go through the whole thing, or do you want to go with your next one?
We'll go one step at a time here. I'm going to do a different thing than you are. I'm picking a game for every day of the weekend.
I love that.
Just
fantastic.
As a celebration for what it is.
Fantastic.
So with the Friday slate, there's not really a whole heck of a lot here in terms of, like, star power.
No.
I mean, you mentioned the Toledo-Michigan State game. That one could probably be the spiciest one. I wouldn't be me if I didn't try to go ahead and pick Purdue to win at least 35.5-point favorites against Indiana State.
There we go. Big Ten Network tonight, 7 o'clock.
Big Ten Network, 7 o'clock. Purdue against Indiana State, who is an FCS program. Please win that.
Handedly.
Handedly.
Yeah.
Not just for the sake of me picking a 35.5-point favorite.
Yeah.
Please act like it.
Got to win that one comfortably.
Got to win that one comfortably. Please don't set the tone on a bad foundation for the year for me, okay? The year's already not going to go great. Let's go ahead and call it that. But I saw UMass handle Rutgers yesterday. Do not do this to me.
Don't
do it to me.
I know it's Rutgers. That game doesn't sit right with me at all. I'm telling you. All credit to UMass. That's a sign of the end times. The trumpets are blaring. If UMass is good at football, we are in a bad place. Like, we are in a bad spot as a nation, as a people. UMass.
That's where we're in a bad spot.
Yes, UMass being good at football is a sign of the bad times are on the horizon. Although, Pop Watson's pretty cool. That was such a fun game. I mean, Watson looked very, very good. And then Rutgers receiver, whose name escapes me, 9 catches for almost 200 yards and 3 touchdowns, was incredible.
Yeah.
Out of him. To Saturday, though.
Saturday.
So I've got 2 games on Saturday that are going to be part of this 4-leg parlay. As I kind of mentioned with Auburn, I'm going to pick them just straight up on the money line over Baylor. I like Alex Golish coming over from Florida State. Or not Florida State, from South Florida. Byron Brown as well as their quarterback. Fifth-year senior. He's had a lot of college experience. And we've seen a lot of these transfer quarterbacks, by the way, really succeed. There's always an argument that these guys coming from lesser conferences, oh man, what's going to happen? They haven't experienced Big 12 football or SEC football. And then they arrive and you're like, oh, football has not experienced them yet. Got it. You know, it's Trinidad Chambliss coming over from Ferris State. And if he played the full year, he may have been the Heisman Trophy winner for Ole Miss. The last couple of years, the Heisman Trophy winners have been transfer quarterbacks. It's not guys that are staying on these rosters and trugging the way through with these programs. It's guys that are making the jumps from Cal to Indiana, from Arizona State to LSU, whatever it is. I'm not saying Byron Brown's going to necessarily win the Heisman Trophy. I think he's going to be a pretty damn good quarterback, though, for Auburn. And that's a program that has been really desperate at the position. I'd argue since Nick Marshall, you know, all the way back when Auburn kind of had devil magic on their side, they've really been hurting at that position. So I'm going to take Auburn on the money line there. It's minus 238. They're favorites to win that one, but I'm going to take them.
I'm going to go ahead and, for my Saturday pick, I'm going to go with James Madison, a 6-point favorite over Liberty. We're going Sun Belt football right here, baby.
Liberty,
where the
James
real
Madison,
sickos
yeah.
live.
I mean, that probably should be a good game.
It should be a good game.
It's not going to be 2 teams that are ranked. It's on ESPNU, but it's Liberty's been very, very good in the mid-major ranks. James Madison, by the way, Kirk Cignitti coached there, and now UCLA's head coach Bob Chesney came from there. James Madison has been pumping out Power 4 head coaches.
It's where the spirit of college football still lays. You know, your conference battles. And opening up conference play right away there in the Sun Belt
feels really
gross. It feels gross, but also it's the spirit of college football. Will it make any sort of impact on the playoff? No.
Mm-hmm.
However, you gotta love when conference play starts right off the rip because you get nasty with it right away for your schedule.
Stresses me out.
I love that.
Stresses me out. Speaking of not conference play, my other pick for this is going to be at. Also on Saturday, I got to do something with LSU Clemson.
Oh, there it is.
I don't love Clemson this year. I just think there's too much smoke around LSU. They're 10.5-point favorites. I don't think Clemson will win this game. I do think they'll cover that 10.5-point spread.
There you go.
They've got a veteran quarterback, it appears, with Chris Vezina. I don't know how much he'll play. They really like this freshman, Tidy Reynolds. He could get a real run here. It's Dabo Sweeney as well. This game was close last year, and neither team ended up being any good. We don't know if either team will be any good this year. It could absolutely be just a butt-whooping for Clemson. But I think there's just too much smoke around LSU. I don't think Clemson will win this, but I do think they'll cover that 10.5-point spread.
All right, let's move to Sunday for pick number 3 for me here. We were talking about Trinidad Chambliss. Well, give me him and Ole Miss to win at least very clearly 6.5 over Louisville. On Sunday...
Ole Miss being a 6.5-point favorite, it's 9 versus 24.
Yeah.
And Ole Miss, I mean, now it's you got Pete Golding still, right?
Golding has established himself now. You've got Chambliss coming back, though, which I think is a huge deal.
Mm-hmm. He's the best quarterback in the SEC.
And once you've got that foundation established here, I can kind of see why it's a 6.5-point favorite here.
Oh, I expected more. I don't really know what to expect from Louisville, but Ole Miss, they're able to bring back some pretty key pieces to a team that went to the semifinal last year.
Yeah.
It's a neutral site game. It's in Nashville.
But I think it'll be just fine for Ole Miss there.
So I avoided Sunday like the plague. I like a lot of those games. Washington, Washington State, nothing was really juicy for me. Washington, significantly better. They're a 23.5-point favorite. Notre Dame, I think, is going to run the table this year. I think they are going to be a murderer's row.
Gross.
They've got a few big games with BYU and Miami. I think they're better significantly than BYU. Miami, we're going to wait and see. CJ Carr might be the best quarterback in the country. There's going to be a few guys up for that, I think, early. So I avoided that. And then Ole Miss, Louisville. I didn't want to touch that one. It's two ranked teams. I like Ole Miss. I don't really know anything about Louisville,
like, so I
avoided
action. That. I love top 25 matchups right away to start it.
So I went to the Monday game, SMU at Florida State.
Same here, so let's get into it.
It's a 2.5-point spread for SMU. That feels like a joke.
It feels kind of disrespectful, and if I was able to take an alternate bet on this, I would. I think SMU is going to beat the brakes off of Florida State.
SMU brings back a quarterback in Kevin Jennings, who, by the way, was their playoff quarterback 2 years ago. So, I mean, they've had this guy for a couple of years here. It's a veteran quarterback. He's a senior this year. SMU's ranked 19th in the country. I get it. It's going to be in Tallahassee. I also think Florida State is garbage. They were struggling with New Mexico. They got the win. New Mexico State, my apologies. But they, again, don't look very good. I don't think the fans are bought into Mike Norvell. I think they want him out. I think the administration wants him out. They're looking for any reason. I'm even seeing here on ESPN, their odds are by DraftKings. SMU's a 3-point favorite. I got him at 2.5. I think that's super easy. I think they're both going to win and cover. That spread to me just feels like easy pickings for week one.
It feels disrespectful, honestly, for SMU. So for me, real quick, just to recap it here, Purdue, 35.5-point favorites over Indiana State. James Madison, 6 points over Liberty. Ole Miss, 6.5 over Louisville. SMU, 3 over Florida State. Those odds, $10 would get you 134.
I've got Michigan State covering at 10.5 over Toledo. I've got Auburn on the money line against Baylor. Clemson to cover at the 10.5-point spread against LSU, but I do think they will lose that game. It's not even part of the bet. I just want that out there on record. And then SMU, I think, cover that 2.5-point spread against Florida State. They are on the road. It literally does not matter to me. I think Florida State is garbage. I do have a 30% profit boost on FanDuel, but $5 will win you $55.63.
Nice
I'm
little
poor.
Stuff.
I'm not going to go all the way out on this. I'm doing this for fun.
We do little guys. We're just little guys there. Take a time out. Come back. Got some end zone talk.
Yeah, we do. 803-0550, the number to call. Matt Perino at the top of the hour. You're listening to WGR.
If you look at Josh Allen over the last, really, 6 times they've been in a playoff, the last 6 playoff losses, he has 14 touchdowns to 1 interception. Mm-hmm. He has a QBR of 88. He's only taken 6 sacks and 237 dropbacks. They lost 3 consecutive times by 3 points or fewer. Where should the scrutiny be? Defense.
Yeah.
Can we get a stop? Can Josh Allen play defense? Because if he can't, that's where the scrutiny should be. To me, Josh Allen has done enough to win a Super Bowl, to get them to a Super Bowl. The defense has been the one that's let him down.
All right, you want to play with that? Jordan Rodgers. That's one for you. That's a question for you.
I mean, there's just no nuance to, you know, that's how it is. I know that's how it is. I think I probably at times treat subjects the same way. That there's just this or that, and there's no, I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, you know where I stand. I don't know how prepared I am to run through the whole speech because it's all, I feel like now that McDermott's gone, it's all sort of, it's past, you know?
Ooh, interesting.
The idea that, judging one versus the other, but I don't know. I have felt all along that I've got the ball with a minute to go, a minute and a half to go, and a chance to win the game. Like, that's time for the championship quarterback to go win the game. I don't care how bad the game was up to that point. You're there. You're down by 3 or 4. Put it in the end zone, and we go home and party. I know it's not that easy, and there are certainly, there have been bad beats for Allen. I mean, 13 seconds quintessentially is not in this category, but I don't know. Like, what do you want to do with last year? Like, I know Denver scored, what did they score, 33 points to 33. Beat you? 33 points. But, like, the 10 of those points easily were gift-wrapped by turnovers. One at the end of the half that was particularly egregious. And, like, look, I'm not here to draw and quarter Josh Allen for all of that either. But this narrative is just, it's fatiguing, I think, because it's fundamentally at its ground floor. It's, of course, it's that other guy's fault. I don't have his jersey. I don't, like, he's not here to save me. And Josh Allen has saved us. I mean, he has brought us so much fun and excitement and entertainment all wrapped into one. I mean, it's been the best. It's been the best run. I mean, I started in 95. The 90s Bills were over. That's still a long time ago. But between then and now, I mean, this current iteration of the team, the Josh Allen Bills, no longer the Sean McDermott Bills, have been a joyride. So I'm not, like, I don't want to be mad at him. And he does do a lot. But I think in those moments, I would say he hasn't come through. Some of the time.
Well, you talk about nuance or whatever, trying to fill out the point. This analyst mentions interceptions. He lost two fumbles against Denver.
Right.
Two picks, two.
Four of
he
the
fumbled three times against Denver.
Four of the turnovers in that game were him. Cook had had another one. So, like, again, you know, maybe part of it is, like, you know how people listen to what they're hearing, and they're just going to hear bits and pieces of it. And, like, I never want to be the guy that's killing Josh Allen. Like, I'm not Nick Wright or anything. Like, I don't know. Like, it's people that just, you know, are in this to just, you know, take shots and get reactions and, like, you know, live the life. I mean, good for you. So, like, I don't want to always be banging on this, but it's just, I'm fatigued by it because I don't think I don't know what exactly is right. I just do believe that saying the defense is the reason they haven't been to the Super Bowl yet, I don't entirely agree with. I think it gives Allen a pass. Reason. I think it gives Allen too much of a pass for mistakes and or just, you know, misses. I guess those are mistakes too. You know, that it just doesn't sit quite right with me.
You know, for me, just like when it comes to coaching stuff, I mean, okay, so he fumbled three times against Denver and threw two interceptions. I can't really put myself in his shoes and imagine, like, would I have not fumbled? Like, just... It happens, of course, turnovers are a death knell, and okay. The one moment where I want to, if I'm going to ride with you and put the playoff history on him, it's Kansas City at home. That's the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's the last two offensive plays of that game. And the second one isn't really like so much on Allen because he's flushed out. If you remember how that game ended, and he kind of throws it away on that play. It's the play before. There's a timeout, and you have all that time to – it's Brady, too. You have all that time to figure out what to do. What are they down?
They're down three. They're trying to tie it with the field goal, ultimately.
They're down three. They're in control of that game, the Kansas City home game. They're in control of that game.
I think
game.
That's
the
a game.
The team would rather be is Buffalo.
I think that's a game – considering who you're playing and, you know, it's the divisional round of the playoffs and you're playing, I don't know if the Chiefs were the defending champs that year or not, but whatever. You're playing the Super Bowl Chiefs here and I've got the ball in field goal territory and I need a touchdown to beat you. Like, that to me is winning time for the future Hall of Fame MVP quarterback. Like, that's it. It's time to go do that.
And if he comes over the top of you like he did in 13 seconds, Mahomes, then okay. But
right. Which could have happened, you know, like the way that all unfolded. Because I know somebody out there is listening to us because there's always a, yeah, but what about, right? Denver, Brandon Cooks catches that ball. Allen completes the comeback from all of the mistakes and they win the game, and they're playing next week in New England in the AFC Championship game.
Yep.
So I know like that's not Allen's fault. He puts that ball right where it needed to be, or like close enough anyway. I mean, Cooks has it's a catch. It should be a catch.
He has to slow down.
And it wasn't. Yeah, that's right. He did. And that brought the defender into the play, but still, like, it's a long throw, and it's
good. It's not perfect.
It's in the landing area. You know what I mean? Like, it's not at the pin, but it's, like, safely on the green, and you're putting for birdie. But nonetheless, there's that. And in this Chief example, the first play of that drive, there's 8 minutes left when they get the ball back after the Hardman touchback, right? After Hardman fumbles at the goal line and they get the ball back, there's, like, 8 minutes to go. And they bled the clock brilliantly. I think it's 8 minutes. I might be exaggerating a little. But there's a lot of time left. That first play is the bomb to Diggs.
This is, again, the home playoff game against the Chiefs. The home playoff
game against the Chiefs. Diggs, and that's where Diggs does the thing with the index finger and the thumb. Like, oh, this close, right? The ball was right there. If he catches that and the defender falls, they score, we probably have a 13 seconds type situation on our hands.
Well, you have half the fourth quarter left.
Right. Because there's going to be 7.5 minutes left or more after he makes – if that goes all the way. And, I mean, 13 seconds, Tyreek Hill took the lead back with a minute left, and then Allen came back again. So you might have still been trading punches there for, you know, a little while. You wouldn't have been home free. I think, actually, you would prefer – I mean, do I want the touchdown that I never got that gives them the lead with half of the fourth quarter to go? Sure, but – your preference, I think, should be to run the clock down and not give them a chance.
Well,
which is a part of your problem with that second to last play.
Yes. I think I would say that play, down 3, 2-minute warning, 2nd and 9 at the Chief 26, is my least favorite play of his in his career.
He goes for Shakir in the end zone.
Which isn't there.
It's there.
Well, anything's...
He's open. I mean, he misses the throw. Because,
but he gets hit.
Yeah, Dawkins gets pushed back, I think, by Chris Jones, and it affects the throw, and it's off target.
Fair enough.
But it's there. I mean, that's the Gabe Davis touchdown in the 13 seconds game, or one of them. Like, it's there.
But half of my problem is that's still too much time.
Exactly, right. You want Diggs on the crossing. I don't want the
touchdown.
Right.
I want to run the game out and then score the touchdown, which Allen has done numerous times. Like, that's been part of his brilliance. Is there was a win in Baltimore the one year where they took it all the way down and then end up, they had a game like this against Miami, if I remember right. They kneel out the fourth quarter to kick the winning field goal. So this only would have tied it. I'm not playing for the field goal. I'm not saying that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's about managing the clock there, and he couldn't help himself, which is really as... you know, relative as criticism of Josh Allen is in his career, is like the top of the list.
Right.
Is just the temptation of the big play. And they had time to – and maybe this is as much on coaches as it is on him, but, you know, he's the guy with the ball. They had time to figure out that a touchdown on the first play was not really the best-case scenario.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's wide open and it's a walk-in, maybe then we're talking about whether Kansas City gave it to him. But that wasn't the case. I mean, it was not that. I just want to go underneath. Diggs is walking across the formation, you know, alone. The Chiefs gave them that. The Chiefs didn't know well enough. The Chiefs should have given him the touchdown. They should have covered Diggs, not Shakir.
I can't say it was a gift, but I'm remembering Shakir much more open than you seem to be.
No, okay.
On the play.
I'll pull back on, like, it wasn't there.
But
I don't even really want it.
It still wasn't optimal. I don't disagree with that. It's always made sense. Like, you just keep... I don't remember what the timeout situations were or whatever.
They had two left.
The Chiefs did.
The Bills did.
Or the Bills. I'm wondering about the Chiefs.
The Chiefs also had two left.
Do I want to make? I want to make them burn those if I can. Right. I'm coming out of the 2-minute warning.
Right.
I keep the ball. I keep it in play. I'm not going out of bounds. Like, all of these things that you want to have buttoned up to finally slay this monster that you've had so much trouble slaying. And none of it turned out to be optimal.
All right, why are we talking about this?
Because somebody on TV said the defense is why the Bills haven't been to the Super Bowl yet.
Yeah, like, 4 turnovers against Denver are not at the top of my list of, like, I wish I could have this back when it comes to Allen. It's that. It's Kansas City when they had him at home. And that, like Denver, you're talking about how the mistakes – they took the lead in Denver and then went to overtime with the ball. Like they definitely had chances.
They got
after
a stop in overtime.
Yes.
That's, you know,
to
so
win the game.
Oh, the defense. They kept, okay, they got you the ball back in overtime.
Yes.
I mean, what more at that point in the game, what more can I do? Oh, but then they got driven on after that. Oh, okay. That's right. A bunch of penalties and like whatever. Yeah, it's just it's it feels good a little. There's like adrenaline
every once in a while
right now that I'm feeling, but ultimately it just all feels kind of, you know, all said and played out.
You
but.
Take the car out of the garage, you drive it around the island, and then you put it back in, and then we'll talk again next year.
Right. Maybe you try to jack it up and put it in reverse to take the miles off, like Cameron in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And maybe the car goes.
What is this movie?
Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Please, for the love of Christ, tell me you know what I'm talking about.
How old a movie is this?
All right, we got to go to break. Let's just take a break.
Yes, I know Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Good one. Good job.
There's a Jim Florentine prank call where he and his partner pretend not to know that movie, and the telemarketer goes in on it, and they're like, "What? Really? That sounds hilarious." That was the instinct I had right there. Embarrassing. Paul Hamilton at 5. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.